everybody doing fantasy this week?
2-0 so far, looking like.
Adam, I see your face. It's not. He doesn't look as confident as Sam.
I'm actually doing FanDuel.
Oh, FanDuel. Okay, okay. Because yeah, Adam likes to put money up.
I did not win any money this weekend.
No money this weekend?
No money.
Okay, well, good news is it's only week one, right?
Only week one.
All right. So, to get things going, let's talk a little Texas State volleyball. Because they had a big weekend. They had a very big weekend. They traveled way out of state. They went up north to Portland to play in the North Harbor Marriott Challenge. They went 2-1 over the weekend. First game, they beat CSU Bakersfield 3-1. Then they lost to Utah 0-3. And then beat Portland 3-0. Guys, what was your takeaway from this weekend?
Well, for me right now, you have to be concerned if you're a Bobcat fan, because Kelsey Winan didn't play in any of those matches. He's a senior leader for the Bobcats. But in the absence of Winan, you had a great tournament from Jordan Cole, Shelby Vasmat, and Jalea Bolden. Those are three anchors for this year's volleyball team. And the 3-0 loss to Utah looks bad on paper, but two of those three sets were by just 2 points in that match. So I think a lot of positives for Coach Chisholm to take away from this weekend, but a 2-1 showing and the long trip, the road trip to Portland, probably some team bonding in there. So overall, I think a good weekend for the Bobcats.
I think this weekend was a good test to show the reflection of the team, because they played a good team in Utah, and then they played an average team in Portland, and then a mediocre team in CSU Bakersfield. So it was just a good way to just show where this team's at.
And also, you mentioned Kelsey Winan is out. She went out in that I can't even think of the name now.
It was
Sam Houston. That's who it was. She went down in that fourth set that eventually won the game for him. Went down with an ankle injury. We don't have an update on that. We asked Coach Chisholm about it after that. She said something along the lines of an ankle sprain, which is, according to Drake, is nothing to play with. But Megan Porter steps in for her, and she's done an excellent job so far. She did really well in that Sam Houston game. She had 10 kills in that final game against Portland. I think if Kelsey Winan is down for an extended amount of time, I hope she comes back at least for conference play. That would be a big deal. I think we have a solid backup in Megan Porter that can really provide some good minutes.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Megan Porter's come in as a freshman and the drop-off hasn't been significant. But I think what Winan brings that is invaluable is her leadership. As a senior out there, she's kind of the anchor and the girl that they look to give them that spark, to give them the momentum. And sometimes when Winan puts a swing on a ball, you can just see how energized the team gets afterward. And so Megan Porter's obviously come in and done a great job, but she'll have to keep it up.
Yeah, Megan Porter's already come in, and she's led the team in kills in a couple games. But, she's only being a freshman, doesn't have that leadership, doesn't have that experience.
And the good news is there's other senior leaders on this team. Shelby Vasmat, she's done a great job as far as the leadership role is concerned. She had 29 kills over the weekend. She was tied with Jordan Cole for that. Lauren Kirch, I think, is really coming into her own. She was SBC Defensive Player of the Year Defensive Player of the Week last year. And defense is really important to this team. And I think, and here's a stat that really proves that, 5-1 when they outblock the opponent. That's really impressive, and it shows how important that is. Jaleel Bolden does a great job at the net, and that's what they really want to do. They're very aggressive at the point of attack on the defensive end.
And I think that's what the coaching staff loves so much about setter Erin Hoppe. When she's on the floor, as opposed to Emily Shelton, both of them give the Bobcats great minutes, great rotations as setter, but when Hoppy's out there and playing that front row, she can really defend well. She's an offensive weapon on that front row, and they rolled with Hoppe this weekend in all three matches of the tournament. Hoppe went out and put up 54 assists against Bakersfield. That's a huge number, and at the beginning of the season, it was kind of back and forth between the two, but now that Hoppy's getting rolling, she kind of presents. She's a little more versatile than Shelton, and I think Erin Hoppe coming along is going to really help the Cats.
Yeah, they're out blocking their opponents this season, 100-65, averaging about 2.6 blocks a set. So yeah, they're a team that is really taking advantage of just blocks.
Well, and to your point, Sam, about Erin Hoppe, along with Emily Shelton. Shelton's only 5'8", which isn't a bad size, but you look at Erin Hoppe, she's got 3 inches on her. She's sitting at 5'11", and so really when you put her up front with Jaleah Bolden and Jordan Cole, that's tough to get through, especially if you put Lauren Kirch up there. So a lot of size, that's going to be a definite help when they get into conference play, because this is such a good conference. And they're in the West Division this year. They split it up East and West, picked to finish second in that Western Division. So this is tough. I mean, they've got Arkansas State over there. They've got Little Rock over in their division. So it's tough. It is not easy. And looking ahead to their schedule, it doesn't get any easier. They're not going to be home until they play Coastal Carolina on the 30th. So we thought Texas State football took a long time to get home. They're still not home this week, and we don't have anything going on, really, as far as here in San Marcos, hitting the road a lot. They just finished up in Portland. They are coming back to Texas. They'll be at Texas A&M Corpus Christi for a Tuesday night matchup tomorrow night at 6:30, and then they head off to San Antonio, so not too far down the road if you guys want to go check it out for the Roadrunner Roundup. They take on Tech, UTSA, and Wichita State, and then it's conference play. And they start out with Troy and South Alabama. I mean, so things are not getting easier for the Cats as far as schedule goes.
No, and I think these next four matches, it's about getting into that rhythm, getting rolling before conference starts, because they want to jump out to a solid conference record to open it up, and then when they get home on the 30th for Coastal Carolina, have this team in a position to start putting a run together and winning matches to open up conference play.
And the good news is after that, it's a four-game homestand with Coastal Carolina, App State, Arkansas State, and then Little Rock. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, if you guys want to get in contact with us, if I could talk, 512-245-FIRE. That's 512-245-3473. Please call us in. We just got our new phone installed. We're here in the new studio. Guys, it's not my first time in the new studio, but it's you guys' first time in the new studio.
My first time. I'm digging it.
Yeah, we can actually sit and look at each other. This is nice. I don't have to guess who's talking next.
Very nice.
And so, and then you can also hit us up on Twitter, @KTSWSports. That's @KTSWSports. And if you want to check us out on the blog, we'll have this Bobcat Radio posted at ktswblog.net in the sports section. There'll be a Bobcat Radio section. Check it out. Guys, we had a pretty good show on Friday. Thomas Aboud was on the show, did the promo video for Texas State, and our web content manager said we got quite a few likes on that. So check us out if you so please. So we just got done talking about volleyball. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more Texas State football, because it's a big one this week, guys. SEC opponent, Arkansas, they look good. They look good. They had a couple close games. They just beat number 15 TCU. I mean, this is going to be a big one.
Yeah, and the Hogs are ranked 24 in this week's AP poll, so that means the Bobcats have top 25 opponents in back-to-back weeks. You know, Houston's going to be ranked when they come in here next Saturday. But this Saturday, it's a cool test. It's a cool game if you're a Bobcat fan getting to go on the road and play an SEC team. But like Kyle said, I mean, Arkansas can play. They've shown it in these two games. They played a tough Louisiana Tech team in week one, squeaked by with that opening week 21-20 win, but then were able to beat TCU at TCU last week in overtime. They survived the storming comeback from TCU in that football game. Kenny Hill was putting on a show in that end of third, fourth quarter, and then Arkansas weathered the storm and got a win. So this is going to be a huge test. The good news, the Bobcats have had 2 weeks to prepare for it, and I expect the line's 31.5, and we were talking before the show. Adam, you think the Bobcats can beat that line?
Yeah, I think they can beat the line, and what I like that plays in favor of Texas State is that Arkansas, coming off an overtime win against Big 12 opponent TCU, and then they play after Texas State, they play at A&M. No, they play A&M at Arkansas.
Yeah, that's the neutral site game in Dallas at Jerry World, so still a big SEC game next week for them.
And so I'm hoping that Arkansas is already looking forward to A&M, and that Tyler Jones and Texas State can come up with little tricks to maybe put up some points against Arkansas.
So you said 31-point spread? We'll see. That's I don't know. I'm not a gambling man myself, but if you guys are listening out there, it is a little tempting. Well, just like that, we're already up against our first break in the show. And, you know, here on Bobcat Radio, we kind of break down we analyze, and we like to break down the science of sports. But if you like just regular science, be sure to tune into Big Picture Science. It's Wednesdays at 7 a.m. You can find it right here on KTSW. It's one of our multiple shows here on 89.9. Discusses scientific and technological developments, innovation, and scientific theory. Engages the public with modern science research through lively and intelligent storytelling. So it's entertaining. You learn a little bit. It's early in the morning. Get your day started right if you're coming in from the bus. and get something going with your with Big Picture Science. Then you tune into Bobcat Radio right afterwards from 11 to 12. All right, guys. Just like that, we're up against our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more Texas State football. We'll dive into Texas State soccer and what they did over the weekend. Don't go anywhere. This is Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9. David Mayo was in action this past week, Thursday. They lost, but it's okay. we still claim him no matter what. When we left, we're talking a little bit of Texas State football. We're going to dive into that a little bit deeper because this is a big matchup against Arkansas, SEC opponent ranked number 24 in the nation. They beat TCU ranked number 15 in overtime, 41-38 this past Saturday. And looking at their schedule last year, they won a lot of big games in overtime. This is a team that is well-coached. That's what that shows me. They're well-coached, they're poised, and they know what to do under pressure. And so this could be this. I'm not saying that this game is going to be necessarily close because I think Arkansas has a little bit more talent than we do. But if it does get close, it's going to be interesting to see the chess match between Arkansas and Coach Withers.
I think Texas State, though, has to have a lot of hope in this game. Obviously, Brett Bielema, since he got to Arkansas, has shown why he came from Wisconsin. We wanted the challenge of the SEC, and he's gotten the Hogs rolling. They've been to a bowl game the past few years and have a chance to compete in the SEC West, the best single division in college football for sure. But for the Bobcats, if you're looking at this, you look back to week one of college football and you go, guys, if I'm Coach Withers, I say South Alabama went on the road to Starkville and beat Mississippi State. You say Troy went into Clemson last week and lost by 6 to the number 2 ranked Tigers. So these Sun Belt teams are hanging with top programs in the nation. Mississippi State's down a little this year, but they're an SEC West team that can really play. So I don't know if that necessarily helps the Cats, because now Arkansas is going to go in there and say, hey, we can't sleep on these guys. They're going to be ready. But at the same time, if you're Texas State, you go, hey, if we execute this game plan, Coach Withers is going to have a game plan for him. If we execute it, I think they can stay in this football game.
Yeah, I think the key is a lot of quick pass plays with Tyler Jones. Arkansas has given up over 600 yards already in two games in passing, and they haven't given up 100 yards of rushing. So I just think with Texas State's O-line and Arkansas's D-line that we should just do a lot of maybe like screen passes early and just get some Tyler Jones a little bit comfortable in the game and get some chemistry with his wide receivers.
Well, and I think we got another 2 weeks of practice already added to that chemistry between those receivers. And the game against Ohio hugely showed that we have legit receivers who can catch the ball, and we have a quarterback that can throw it. And I think the speed of the offense is really going to help us this coming week against Arkansas. Of course, Coach Withers, he wanted 90 plays a game. So, and we were very fast against Ohio. I imagine after 2 weeks of practice and film and watching that it's going to be even quicker. We're going to come out. I can tell you this is what's going to happen. We're going to come out with a solid game plan because Withers executes very well. That's what they did against Ohio, and we were able to get through that. But I'm pretty sure that we will have, I think it's going to be a lot closer than we think. I don't think it's a 31-point spread. I'm going to say we're probably going to lose by double digits. I don't like doing specific scores. That also goes along with the gambling thing, I guess. So I think it's going to be a lot closer than we think, but it's still going to be a double-digit loss.
Yeah, and to your point, Adam, you saw Texas State have success doing those short passes in week one because they know Ohio had a great front seven and a team that could really rush the passer, and they got the football out of Tyler Jones's hand quickly. He established some chemistry and a rhythm early in the game with Gabe Schrade and with Eric Luna, two guys who can really catch the ball and have come along in fall camp. So I think that's a great point. And then that short passing game can essentially become your run game, you know, and that can bring the defenders closer up, get them into some tighter man coverage, and then maybe you get Elijah King behind the defense or you get somebody like that and hit a big play for the Cats. And I think winning the turnover battle is going to be huge in this football game. Austin Allen, the quarterback for the Hogs, doesn't turn it over much through the two games. He's thrown two picks, but those were against some pretty good defenses over there for TCU and La Tech. And then that running back, Raleigh Williams, he's kind of been a workhorse back, 52 carries in two games, so he's over 25 a game. So they don't necessarily turn the football over, but if the Cats can get some early turnovers and get off to a fast start, I think, like both of you have said, this game can be closer than that line shows.
What I want to see is definitely a lot of fight, and that's something that is going to carry on to the next week because this is the meat of the schedule, and it's weird to say that without being conference, but you're playing Arkansas, then the next week you bring Houston to Sam Marcus, and they're the sixth-ranked team in the nation at this time. I don't know what they're going to be. They could possibly be ranked even higher than that if they come, you know, depending on how next week goes. So, and that brings me to another question of – because you brought up how fair the SBC has been the first couple weeks, and they've, you know, with the game against Clemson beating Mississippi State. How big is the gap? Is it dwindling? Is it getting smaller? Or are these teams in the Power 5 conference, are they not what we thought they were, or are we just better than we thought we were? I don't know where it's at.
You know, to me, Appalachian State set the tempo or set the precedent when they hung with Tennessee.
And they've been doing that
first game
since last season. They were doing that.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, these programs, if you're outside the Power 5, and the Sun Belt is in such a recruiting hub, the Southeast part of the nation, that's where the best talent of kids is in the whole nation. So Sun Belt teams are gonna start to rise, but teams like App State, and then what was shocking, South Alabama, after the good performance they had against Mississippi State, goes and gets thumped by Georgia Southern. So that shows how good the top of this conference is with Georgia Southern. And you know, I think obviously if you play an extended schedule of Sun Belt versus SEC, we're only gonna win one. We got the Mississippi State, we win a couple games, but you know, I think it's a down year for the SEC. You saw in that first week they split exactly. Of the 14 teams in the conference, they went 7-7. You know, so they aren't the perennial powers. Alabama at the top looks terrific.
And
as
I think
always.
That's what happens is Alabama is so good that it kind of dwindles down, and the rest of them are. And then it makes the SEC that much powerful without your bottom teams being that good.
And Alabama just kind of skews the curve.
It does. It's an outlier.
Yeah.
And then I think. The problem comes when these big power schools, they don't necessarily get, I mean, they obviously don't get up for Troy, Texas State, or South Alabama, but you better bet Texas State has U of H circled on their schedule. And so it's just like, it gets these players excited to play that game while these players are already looking probably on to their next game. And so it just gets, that's where these close games come from.
And sometimes those 11 a.m. kickoffs that South Alabama beat Mississippi State on, some of these guys, they're just waking up. They're getting rolling. The fans are sleepy. That atmosphere in Starkville wasn't anything like it was like for an SEC football game when South Alabama went in there and won. So, I don't know. The 11 a.m. kicks, that's the recipe for success. I know Texas State plays Arkansas at 6:30 this Saturday, and it's on SEC Network. The Hogs will be ready, but I think Texas State's going to come out and show what this school's about.
So something interesting happening with Arkansas outside of their game, big game against TCU, and they won it. I saw this on Twitter this morning, and I like to stroll through Twitter. I tweeted this out earlier, but Monday mornings are the best time for Twitter because you got everything from the week before, from Sunday before and Saturday, and everything just kind of becomes collective, and you see all this kind of stuff. It's wonderful. There was a jersey misspelled on the Arkansas side, and I saw this on Javonte O'Roy's Twitter. Number six, there's two number six on the roster. You know, one plays offense, one plays defense. It appeared to be T.J. Hammonds. I'm not sure, so I'm not going to say it was him. But the jersey was misspelled.
Oh, no.
It was not, you know, because Arkansas spelled Arkansas. It was Akransas. And the captain said, Nike, you had one job. And it was really, Akransas. Akransas. So we're definitely going to keep an eye out for that to make sure that doesn't happen again. And maybe that's why we're with Adidas. We'll see. Looking around the SBC, of course, Sam alluded to it. Georgia Southern beat South Alabama in the first Sun Belt Conference game in week two. Seems a little early for me. But Georgia Southern thumps South Alabama. Georgia Southern is the only, not the only undefeated team, the only two-win team in Sun Belt Conference play because Texas State is still undefeated. 1-0. Everyone else is either 1-1 or has not won a ball game yet. And also, did you guys see the new locker room? The Texas State locker room? It was on Twitter this morning. It looked awesome.
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter this morning, and I was like, we're moving up.
We're looking
perfect
good.
Perfect time for the reveal. Those guys got to be pumped up, psyched now. And
you win one game, you win one game, and your locker room looks better. I wonder what happens if you win two.
Yeah, Coach Withers, 1,000 win percentage.
That's
right now.
What I'm talking about. So moving on, then obviously a huge game against Arkansas this weekend. We will have it right here on KTSW. It will kick off the set for 6:30. Sam will be in the studio for that one. Also, our own Russell Ramsey will be in the KTSW studio providing pregame, halftime, and postgame coverage. Bill and Brant will be on the call from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Be sure to tune in right here on KTSW. Moving along, the other football, Texas State soccer. They're 3-4-1 on the season. They've had a tough go of it here of late, but they finally got a win after a four games, or really, they lost the game, then they tied, and then they lost three straight. So I'm going to say a five game stand without winning a ball game, and they finally beat a team, Northwestern State. They got the win 1-0 in Bobcat Soccer Complex. After, this is the second game of their four-game homestand, and they got the win. And a big win, I would like to say, before they get rolling into Sunbelt Conference play. Jordan Kondikoff with the lone goal in that one. And it's much needed because they start conference on Friday against Little Rock.
Yeah, and with conference opening this Friday, I looked ahead to the opponent. It's Little Rock, like you said, and Little Rock played Northwestern State this year and lost to them 2-0. So if you go back and you look at that film, if you're Coach Connor, you say, hey, girls, we just came off a win where, hey, we shut out a team that they gave up two goals to, and we beat them 1-0. So, you know, this non-conference schedule's out of the way. You kind of learned, you got experience, you grew in that time, and now's the time when it really matters. They got to put it all together. Little Rock comes in here Friday, a team that they beat 2-1 last year, a team that they've had success against, and that was in Little Rock. So I expect them to come out and Prater to have a nice ball game and to step up as a senior in our first conference match of the year. So it should be a good one. And then Sunday, looking ahead to Sunday, since we won't talk before then, it's Georgia State coming to town, the team that was the 6th seed in the Sun Belt tournament last year when the Bobcats were the 3 seed and Georgia State upset us. So revenge game there. The Bobcats should be hungry. They should be ready. And it's nice to finish the non-conference schedule with a win and get some momentum going forward.
Yeah, Texas State's problem, though, over that 5-game skid was they had 4 games where they didn't put up a goal. And so I went and did some research, and they had 147 attempts and only 7 goals to account for that. So I think the key to coming into Sunbelt play is taking advantage of the opportunities they are given, because they've been given a lot of opportunities, but they just haven't really had luck at getting it in the goal.
And, you know, the one game that I got to call was the game against Houston, and that was a double overtime game that ended up in a tie. And in that game, they shut down Lauren Prater. She had nowhere to go. And I imagine when you look at the scouting report for Texas State, of course you have Lauren Prater's name circled because she is the offensive threat. She will do things to your team that you definitely don't want to happen. So they've got to be keying in on her, and she is not. And it was Kondikoff that was able to get the goal. So with those people really keying in on Lauren Prater, it should allow for other players to step up and really make an impact. And so Kondikoff might be that player. Ramsey is another one of those that could be a player. Lauren Prater, she's struggling here as of late, and maybe she hasn't. I always believe that Coach Connor has something up her sleeve. I just, she's done this for so long that I truly believe that. And so maybe she's saving something for conference. I don't know what it is, but Prater, she's going through a skid right now.
Yeah, and there are other girls that have the potential, like you were saying, and Cassie Hormuth's another one who's put the ball in the net for the Bobcats in the past. But when you're in those slumps, sometimes it takes a player like Kondikoff to come in and break them. And if they can start showing that they can be real threats, it's only going to help, because Prater will start, the defense will have to start paying respect to the other Bobcats. And then just taking advantage, getting into transition, getting the defense to fuel the offense sometimes, getting a turnover forced, or maybe being a little more aggressive on the defensive end to try to set the offense up in transition and a fast break with something that just gets them some easy goals scored. They scored 2 against SFA, but that was really the first game of the year where the goalkeeping was the issue. They gave up 3 goals to the Jacks in a 2-3 double overtime loss. So they need to just put it together, come together where you just win like 2-0, 3-0, and one where the offense plays really good and the girls in net play good as well.
Yeah. Do you think going into Sunbelt play, how do you think they'll treat the goalkeeping situation? They're still playing both goalkeepers, Catherine Budd and Heather Martin.
Well, with Buddy, I think, because when we had that Houston game, Buddy was impressive. Buddy was really, really impressive, and so I like her in the net. And, that was a freshman in a double overtime situation where, it was sudden death. First one to score, it's over with. And so to put a freshman like that, I think that builds your confidence, or it builds your experience quick. I mean, you're getting, the fire test right there. And she seemed to be, she seemed to really strive in that kind of situation. So I'm good with Buddy. I'm not gonna be the one to tell Coach Connor, this is who you should have in the goal, because she knows a lot more than I do, obviously. But I'm gonna say I would be comfortable with Buddy throughout conference. And then obviously it's gonna be whoever has the hot hand from that point on. She's smart enough of a coach to make that make that call. So, but for me, it's not so much the goalie situation. That obviously seems to work itself out. Here's a couple stats on Lauren Prater. One goal so far, and that was against Prairie View A&M. She is shooting at a shot percentage of 0.059. I'm not good at math. That's 5.9%. That's not good. That's not very good at all, especially not Lauren Prater numbers. So she's struggling, and it's non-conference, so it's okay. But there definitely needs to be something going like that. And I like what you said, Sam, about need to get on the attack, speed it up a little bit maybe, and try and get Prater in those situations with the goalie.
Yeah, and she just needs the confidence right now. And I think what Coach Connor is going to tell her is to keep kicking. Keep going at the goal because you're the one who's proven that you can put it in the net for us. And if she's a smart enough player and an unselfish enough player where if she's coming down and she could start to maybe facilitate. And you see that in other sports where when your main scorer sometimes goes into a slump or can't find the rhythm, they become more of a facilitator and use kind of their scoring ability as a decoy. And maybe she starts to do that, get into a position where she's sucking in a lot of the defenders and then passes it off to another player who has a better angle, a better shot at the goal. So a 3-4-1 record through non-conference, now you could kind of just erase that. They're 0-0 coming into conference. That's what matters. It's a clean slate. And right now she can say, I could go out here and just ball out in conference and still be conference offensive player.
And I'm probably going to take this somewhere differently, but this is what I like about these types of things. If you look at the way college football is set up, those two to three exhibition games mean everything. And then you go to conference and it's the same type of gravity. If you lose one game, you're out of the playoffs. I like it the way it's set up. Like you said, 3-4-1, that's your preseason. Then you go into conference, that's the real deal. That's why I like these other things. I'm sorry, I had to get on my soapbox there for a second. But Little Rock is the game that matters, and that's the game that should have been circled. All these other games are just practice, basically. It's a live practice with people in other color jerseys. But moving on, Lauren Prater, she's going to get it together. I have no doubt about that. This is a very talented soccer team. Coach Connor has got these girls whipped up into shape, and they play outside. It's an outside sport, and we have to walk outside. And do you know what it feels like right now?
It was pretty humid.
It wasn't too bad this morning. It wasn't too bad.
Golly, this weekend was beautiful.
Oh, it was fabulous,
it was gorgeous,
wasn't it?
Man.
I was in San Marcos, or not Sam, I was in New Mexico. It felt great. There was no humidity. It was beautiful. The sun was out, and I actually had to put on a jacket. It was weird. It finally felt like football season.
Yeah, you could smell it in the air. I loved it.
Great.
I didn't see the fresh air. I was feeling under the weather, so I just sat on my couch and watched football.
We've got Adam off in the corner away from us. We've got the mic extended as far as possible because we're not trying to get sick over here. We got a lot to do. But right now in San Marcos, it is 82 degrees and sunny. The high is 91. The low is 71. So, could be hot, could be cold. That's quite a range there between the two. But make sure that you are staying hydrated. Make sure that you are, number one, getting to your classes on time. That's important. And with that, we will take our break. We were just talking about Texas State soccer. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of San Marcos high school football. And then we'll go into the NFL season because things are getting started. So, you're listening to KTSW San Marcos. This is Bobcat Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a second. This past year from Texas State basketball program. And the reason I play that is because he did something special over the weekend. Signed to go play overseas in Hungary. Congratulations, Imani Gant. We're going to try and get you on the show. You get some claps and, congratulations. And he's going to get paid. And so I'm pretty sure this is what he was telling Hungary.
Show me the money!
And Imani Gant, you got showed the money, and so congratulations. We hope to get you on the show sometime, talk about it. I know you're probably really busy. I believe he was on a flight not too long. I think he's already gone over there. But, he did a great job while he was over here at Texas State Basketball. So, shout out to you, Imani Gant, signing overseas.
Dream come true.
Dream come true, getting to play professional ball. You don't have to, worry about getting a job like we do. You get to go play basketball for a living. That's what, if I could do that, I'd give you this spot. St. Marcus, so we wanted to mention that, throw that in there one more time. Congratulations, Imani Gant. And before we left, we were going to talk about San Marcos High School football. This past week, lost to New Braunfels, 49-35, if I can remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting, you and I, Sam and Adam and I, we were talking about how this game went. If you look at the box score, San Marcos won a lot of the battles that you need to win a ball game. They won the turnover battle. They had good numbers through the air. They had good numbers rushing the ball. But they lost. And it's to try and piece it together is a little difficult. It's a weird loss. And they and I think this is where it happened. They gave up 660 yards of total offense and 7 rushing touchdowns.
Their strategy for the past couple years has been bend, don't break on defense, and they broke in this game. You went into the fourth quarter, the ball game's tied 28-28. Coach Soto had to be thinking, we've put ourselves in a position to win the football game, and that's all you can do at this point. These are two good 6A football teams, New Braunfels and San Marcos, so they knew it would be an evenly matched game, but at that point, the Rattlers had already turned New Braunfels over 3 times. They'd already picked off their quarterback 3 times. And then New Braunfels eventually going into the fourth just said, all right, forget putting the ball in the air. Deflate the football. We're going to run it on these guys because they can't stop it. They can't stop it. And right now for 16, 17-year-old kids, they have to be looking at each other going, man, how do we keep getting gashed by the run?
Yeah, this game could have been even worse than it was. They were able to pick off 3 passes in that first half just to even keep it I think it was 21-14 at half. And then if it wasn't for, like, even Prudy Catarone's 92-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, and then Johnson's 68-yard gash for a touchdown, 2 plays that were able to get points up fast, then this game could have even been, like, a, 56-21 type game.
And this has always been a team that puts up points. They make plays ever since, you know, David Hamilton days a year ago, and Kavion Garner, who's out with an injury. We still have a running back that can make plays, Jamon Johnson. I don't know where he came from, where he's been, or if he even decided to play football until this year. I don't know what it was, but the guy needs to get more carries, and I think, you know, he did, obviously, so he's going to continue to play well. But this was a team that could go and they could have a shootout with any team, and that's how they won. The first couple games last year, they would, you know, back and forth, and the defense made a big play at the end. It was either an interception by Austin Castillo or it was a fumble somewhere in there. And they still have Austin Castillo and Prudy Calderon who are making plays in the secondary, but there's nobody up front. They have nobody that can get in there and stop the run. Colby Vadreen, who is one of the keys to this defense, obviously. I mean, he's an outstanding pass rusher, but he's not big enough. He doesn't have that kind of nose for a runner to get in there and stuff up the offensive line at the line of scrimmage like Joseph Wilburn did last season.
So we'll see if the Rattlers start to change their defensive philosophy a little bit. If they start to just have to put people in the box and start to man their guys up on the outside or run cover 3 or cover 1 and just bring 8 into the box just to help out with run support so much that they kind of change their identity. And those guys in the secondary who are really good at what they do have to start coming up and being extra linebackers in the box because, I mean, they're giving up, you know, over 6 yards a carry on the ground, which is tough. I mean, you're not going to win football games because, A, the other team can control the clock and you don't get your offense, which for the Rattlers is the best part of their team. It keeps them off the field. So either they have to change up the defensive philosophy a little bit and start bringing those guys closer, or on the offensive side of the ball, you go, okay, Jamon, we want these big plays, but man, we got to start controlling the football more and keep our defense off the field because right now we're still getting in these shootouts, but we're getting outshot.
Yeah, I think the key is for these maybe these growing pains on defense is to change actually the philosophy of the offense to more of a slower pace than maybe they're used to. And just giving this defense a chance to really make adjustments on the sideline.
And see, and that's tough because that's what Coach Soto wants to do. He wants these big plays. He wants to break it off, and he wants to crush your spirit defensively by saying, hey, look, at any point in time, my running back can run for 55 yards and get in the end zone without a problem, no matter how good you are defensively. And the offense is not the problem. And it's tough to change your scheme, especially when you're already in the season like this, and Coach Soto's already set a culture of what they're going to do. They're going to put the ball in the end zone. They're going to put up a lot of points, and it's exciting. It's fun football. But when you look at the other side of the ball and you lose all these keys defensively, Joseph Wilburn, they lost a couple other linebackers that really help with the run. I think you have to adjust, and I can't wait to get Soto in here on Wednesday so we can talk about this because he's got to be thinking that in the back of his head too. And it's not so much that you don't trust your defense, and you can't because they keep giving up these huge running gains, and teams are going to pick up on that, especially when they get in the district, and it's going to be a tough matchup for them, for anybody.
You don't have to hit the panic button yet if you're the Rattlers. You're 1-2. You're not off to the start that you wanted. This is a team that's picked to finish second in their district in a tough 6A district.
And it's non-district.
Yeah, and it's non-district. We talked about it with soccer just a few minutes ago. You can clean the slate once those district games come to be. And Coach Soto's going to have what he wants to do implemented by district. But the Bowie Bulldogs got to be licking their chops right now. They played a good Vista Ridge team last week and beat Vista Ridge pretty soundly. And Vista Ridge, a team that went three or four rounds in the playoffs, 5A playoffs, but in the playoffs last year. So Bowie's got to be licking their chops going, hey, we're going to be able to move the football on San Marcos. So right now it's about finding that defensive identity and, hey, keep the big plays coming. If now you have two weapons, if Garner does get healthy and come back and to have him and Johnson in the same backfield or to be able to put the ball into those two playmakers' hands, man, if I'm Tyler Moreno, I'm going, man, this is awesome. If I'm Soto, I'm going, this is great, because San Marcos is going to be able to score. Eventually you got to plug up the nosebleed and stop something.
The good news for San Marcos is that I think they can get some confidence this week playing Taft, who's 1-2 and lost this past Friday 35-2 to Churchill. And so I think this is definitely a winnable game. It's in Rattler Stadium. And so I think this will give them some confidence getting ready for district play.
Yeah, they move. Anytime they play in San Marcos, they're a different ball club. They play a lot better. And that loss last Friday was their first loss in a regular season game in I don't know how long. They went 5-0 last season in the regular season at home. So that was the biggest thing to me, was how they were unable to really make those big plays at home. I'm not used to seeing that. That's what kind of threw me off.
Yeah, and the momentum at home as a high school football player, you can just feel it. There's a different atmosphere about it, and it seems like the ball just sort of goes your way, it rolls your way, something that the momentum tilts your way, and it didn't happen last week. But like we've harped on, that's okay. It's okay that you're 1-2 right now. There's been good football teams who go into the playoffs, especially this day and age when four teams get into the playoffs, with mediocre overall win-loss records. It's about getting in the dance is what it's about, and having your team sort of rolling once you get there, having the momentum going your way, starting to figure out who you are by the time you get there. And if San Marcos does that with the weapons they have on offense, they can play with anybody and get three or four rounds deep in the playoffs. Looking forward to Taft, this has got to be one of those games you look at and go, we got to get some confidence. We got to get Jamon Johnson still rolling. He only got 12 carries. Maybe give him the ball a few more times. He ripped off the big 68-yarder, so that really helped his average, almost 11 yards
about to
a
say,
carry.
He had 12 carries for 136 yards.
So the kid has got to be confident right now, but you keep giving it to him, three touchdowns. Maybe see if you can find a secondary rusher if Garner's not back this week, and then let Moreno spin it a little more. Offensively, you're doing just fine. Defensively, I think what they need is like a momentum play where somebody comes up and just meets the running back in the hole and maybe forces a fumble or something like that. And then they see the hardest thing for a high schooler to do is go, oh, it's not that bad as a safety to come up and run support and put my shoulder in there. That didn't hurt that bad.
They have an athletic enough of a safety in Prudy Calderon. I mean, the guy is an unbelievable athlete, and that's an excellent transition because I want to talk about Prudy. He's got three interceptions so far this season. I don't think he had one last year. He might have had one last year. He either had none or one. But he was an athlete. That's all he was. He was just flat out, he's the fastest guy on the team. He's the fastest guy on the field. When we were talking to Soto last week, he ran a 4-1 in the agility challenge on a college level. That was elite. It was one of the top in the country. This kid, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him on Saturday somewhere, because he's that good of an athlete, but his mind is getting there. He's taken the role of a safety as a defender, and that makes him that much better. So if they want to start getting him into the end of the backfield, number one, he's the athlete to do it. Number two, he's got the smarts. He'll be able to find the hole, be patient, and get in there. And I would not be surprised to see him doing that, because you've still got enough secondary power with Castillo and the cornerbacks to be able to make up for that safety blitzing and getting past the line of scrimmage. So I think we could see Prudy doing that in the next couple games. I wouldn't be surprised.
And playmakers got to make plays. And Prudy is a playmaker on this Rattler team. And I wouldn't be surprised, like you were saying, Coach Soto starts sending him on blitzes, getting him into the backfield to wreak havoc. And he's athletic enough, he could make some of those highlight plays where he jumps up, bats the ball into the air, intercepts it, or he chases down the zone read play from the backside and wraps the running back up for a loss in the backfield. But Coach Soto's already harped on him, you got to go make plays, you got to attack the football. Sometimes as a safety, you don't like to go gamble on that football, because if you do and it gets over the top, it's a touchdown. And Prudy has gambled three times this year and come up with three interceptions. So that's a good ratio, but the playmakers got to keep making plays for the San Marcos defense.
And I think if you can even ask Prudy to even have more energy than he already has, is to put him on offense and maybe just make a few plays and just get him the ball and get him maybe like a screen or an in around or something, just something. Because he's so fast, like if he can just get a little space, then he's gone.
Well, what they do is they tell him they put him on the far side as a wideout, and they say, Prudy, just run straight. Run straight. When you hit about the 20-yard line, turn around. The ball's going to be there because you're definitely going to be burning your man. And he's a special teams player as well. He had the kickoff return for a touchdown. I mean, they kick away from him. He is going to be a huge impact player coming into district. And another one, if we don't have Garner coming back, even if we have Garner coming back, Jamon Johnson. I'm sold. I am sold. This kid is legit. He can run the football. He can play football. This guy, 12 carries, 136 yards, 3 touchdowns against New Braunfels. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but he had 2 against Canyon last week, so he's got 5 in 2 games. This kid is going to be something special, and it's a huge, it's really good for moving on, because Garner's going to graduate after this year no matter what happens, so it's good to know you still have somebody in the backfield. I don't know what the quarterback situation looks like past Moreno, so having somebody in the backfield like that, you're still going to have a big offensive line. That looks good.
Yeah, Johnson, he has some serious speed. I mean, he had an 80-yard TD against Canyon, and then a 68-yard TD against New Braunfels. I mean, is he going to do a 92-yarder this week?
He might. I mean, he's going to pull a Dorsett from the 1-yard line, 99 yards, just straight through. I mean, this kid, he's got breakaway speed.
And what baffles me about it all is he's a sophomore. He might not be able to drive a car.
He can't. His mom drops him off to practice.
Yeah, and we're sitting here talking about this kid going, man, he's got elite talent at the 6A level. He could be playing on Saturdays. Oh, wait, he's got 2 more years of high school left. So really good news for the Rattlers in regards to that. How crazy is that? A quarter of his touches last week in the backfield went for touchdowns. That's an awesome stat. I mean, you see that with fullbacks sometimes because they get 2 carries and one of them they plunged in from the 1-yard line. But, I mean, yeah, the Rattlers, they'll get it figured out, I think. Coach Soto is going to have these guys that were a playoff team a year ago. They're going to get it figured out. I think these next 2 weeks with Taft and I believe it's San Antonio Memorial are going to really help them get that confidence before they kick it off in district when the games really matter.
Looking ahead for San Marcos, they play Taft. This Friday will be myself and Jason will be at that game. It's Rattler Stadium. If you can't make it out, tune in right here to KTSW 89.9. Kickoff is at 7:30. Pregame will be at 7:15. Looking ahead after that, they will be taking on, McCallum. They'll be at McCallum in San Antonio and then taking on Aikens, and that is where they start district play at, against Aikens at home. That is October 7th is that ball game. And so, San Marcos High School football, it's an exciting time. It's early in the season, so if you can, make sure that you get out there, see these games, and if you can't, listen to them right here on KTSW. We take care of you guys all day long. So we talked about Texas State football. We talked about San Marcos High School football. Now let's talk about the big boys.
Whoa.
In the NFL. And as you two guys walked in, and it's funny because we've got a Texans fan and a Cowboys fan, and both of your Sundays went completely different. And I like that I'm neutral, so I get to kind of mediate between the two of you. So I will start with the Cowboys.
Oh, good.
Because we'll get the bad one out of the way first, so we don't have to end the show with that. First game for Dak Prescott. Okay, at first regular season game for Dak Prescott. He didn't look bad.
No, and he started off the football game looking like an NFL quarterback, and I was impressed out of the gate. I think he opened 8 for 9 throwing the football, so I was really happy with that. You saw they kept flashing the camera to Romo on the sideline. He was cheering him on, and I thought, all right, just get it down there to the end zone. He was doing a great job hitting his secondary read, which is a young quarterback. The temptation could be, I got Dez Bryant out there. I'm just going to throw that football up to him. But he was hitting Beasley on crossers. He was hitting Witten on checkdowns. And then when we got into the red zone, it was like, golly, Witten doesn't have that step and that ability. He just kind of boxes guys out now to get space. Beasley, they can cover him in the red zone. He's fast and shifty, but if you put a big enough safety down on him, so we couldn't get the ball into the end zone. And then, I mean, Dak Prescott, we're all talking about him. He was the 4th-round pick for the Cowboys this year. First time they've started a rookie running back quarterback combo since 1969 when Roger Staubach was the guy, and that went all right. I'm not saying Dak's going to be Staubach and get his name in the star up there. But anyways,
you would be the only Cowboy fan not saying that.
Yeah, I'm pumping the brakes early. He lost the football game still. I don't know if Roger won his. I'd have to look that up. But I was more concerned with Zeke, man, the 4th overall pick as opposed to a 4th-round pick. The tread on the tire, it was just a wall. He was running into a wall. And what concerned me, and I hope the Cowboys don't fall in love with this, Alfred Morris had the hot hand. Alfred was running for 5-6 yards a carry. And whether it was the Giants going, hey, Morris is in, they're going to pass the football, or whether it was Alfred just with his experience was seeing holes in the defensive line, he was making better runs. He had the hot hand, and they would take him out after his series, after he'd pick up a first down and throw Zeke back in there. Zeke, 20 carries, 51 yards. That's 2.5 a carry. Not going to get it done.
Now, I want to, you mentioned you saw Romo on the sideline. You're right. They kept going over to him, seeing what he was looking like. Could he be? At some point, I know Garrett is a quarterback guy. He really likes to mess with the quarterbacks. But Romo's old. He's old. And so even if he gets healthy, he's got maybe 1 to 2 years left of being a solid quarterback. Do you see him in that hat instead of a helmet for the Cowboys?
I think I do.
Would you be mad if they did it?
No, he embraces that role already.
Well, he had to.
And coming from that small school, and he's just a student of the game. He's always been there. He said his preparation is what makes him be able to do some of the things he does. And I could see it. I think he's got the itch to play still. The dude says he wants to play till he's 40. Right now he's got the body of a 60-year-old.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, reality's going to set in at some point. But I could certainly see it. What I was most concerned with the Cowboys, and it made me scratch my head, inability to get off the field by the defense on that last drive. Terrence Williams' bonehead play, that didn't lose him the game. It didn't help. I don't know if Dan Bailey would have made the 60-yard field goal, but it didn't help. But the inability of the defense with linebackers like Sean Lee and some of those to get off the football field, it concerned me. But, hey, they weren't going to go 16-0. The last team that went 16-0 ended up losing in the Super Bowl anyway, so good. We don't have to talk about that anymore. We'll go 15-1. It's fine.
Yeah, but the Cowboys, I think it's already almost a must-win this week against the Redskins because you don't want to go 0-2 in your division to start out the season. And so I find it funny, though, because I think Cowboy fans are, a lot of Cowboy fans are actually happy that Dak's playing and that Romo's hurt. But then I see that that Cowboys are 1-15 in the last 16 starts without Romo. I think as a Texans fan, I value Romo more than most Cowboy fans.
And Romo, he's the highest-rated fourth-quarter quarterback of all time. And Dak came in and he got us into a position to at least have a shot to win the football game on that last fourth-quarter drive. We'll see. Overall, I thought Dak was fine. He didn't turn the football over. He made good reads. 25 of 45 isn't excellent, but I thought Linehan did a great job putting him in positions to succeed. He rolled him out, made half the field instead of trying to scan a whole NFL defense. It was a good game. You lost by 1 point. That's going to happen in the NFL.
I think you were meant to lose that game. I don't know if you guys had luck on your side because of what happened last season with the opener against the Giants. I'm not going to say lucky because Romo is one of the best fourth quarter quarterbacks ever. I'm not going to deny that fact. But you kind of got away with one.
You stole one
from the Giants, so they kind of stole one back in your home field. It is what it is. But before we go to break, a reminder that Bobcat Radio is sponsored by the University Bookstore right here on campus. Don't forget the University Bookstore is located in the LBJ Student Center and is your home for everything Texas State, whether it be textbooks, school supplies, or all of your official Bobcat merchandise. The University Bookstore has it all. We're talking Cowboys on the other side of this break. We're going to talk a little bit about the Houston Texans and then some more NFL news. We got some NFL games coming on tonight. Don't go anywhere. There's 10 minutes left to Bobcat Radio right here on KTSW 89.9. And welcome back to Bobcat Radio. Kyle Spencer, Sam Eisenberg, Adam Byerly, your Monday crew, bringing you everything that happened over the weekend, looking ahead to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, everything that's going on. Speaking of Sunday, we had the first one of the NFL season, and it was a good one. Left off talking about Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, disappointing 1-point loss to the Giants, but Houston, they had a little bit of a different story. Brock Osweiler looked really good in his opener with the Texans. Adam, as the resident Houston Texans expert, I'll let you explain what happened on Sunday.
Yesterday was probably the best day a Houston fan could ever hope for. Houston won, Dallas lost, Jacksonville lost, Tennessee lost, and then Indianapolis lost. So I was just crying tears of joy yesterday. And then, but what I was mainly took away from the game was Will Fuller, who
the kid looked good,
beast.
He dropped a big one early, but he responded. And I know this is a bad comparison, but Pretty Calderon, if you get him in space, then he's gone. And then Lamar Miller still rushing over 100 yards. I know it took, 28
carries.
But that O-line is not very good. And then Dwayne Brown's injured. So even, their best people on that O-line aren't there. And so And then on the defense side of the ball, that defense, once they get gelling,
it's going to be good.
It's gonna
salty,
be,
man. They looked really good on the defensive side of the ball. What I liked, Osweiler got it to 8 different receivers. They really spread the ball out, opened up the entire field, and I think that's what really allowed Lamar Miller to get that running game going, because Will Fuller, he looked excellent yesterday. DeAndre Hopkins, he's a beast. You know, he's one of the top five, top three probably receivers in the league. So Osweiler did a good job getting the ball to him. And so I think this is a Houston team. I was so down on this Houston team coming in. One of the first shows we did before the Sunday, I said, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm changing my mind. And I think that's fair. It's fair, you know. And I'm going to make as many excuses as I want to. But this is a different Houston team than I expected. And I did not think that they were going to beat Chicago. Not that I think Chicago's a very good team, but I didn't think that they would be able to do that under pressure. So hats off to Houston and the Texans. And, you know, that was a well-deserved win.
Yeah, and with all their new pieces with Osweiler and Miller, those were the main new pieces. And with Fuller, those are all new guys in Texans uniforms, and they stepped up and did a nice job. Hats off to Houston. And then the defense, they allowed the 14 points in the first half, shut the Bears out in the second half. Jay Cutler did his usual thing and folded in the second half. My goodness, that interception he threw where his receiver did stop running. But holy cow, that would have been a pick regardless, I think. He threw it right to the Texans secondary guy, and I was just like, well, some things never change.
Yeah, he's always been a reckless player.
Man.
And the big test will come this weekend against the Chiefs. It's home, but I was actually went last year to the playoff game where the Texans lost 30-0 to the Chiefs.
And the Chiefs are hot. They came on that the comeback win against the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers folded what's new, but they were down, what, 21-3?
21-3 at one point, and then 27-10 at another, and stormed back.
And then Alex Smith took over, so that's going to be a good test for that defense.
Yeah, I think Alex Smith's probably, in my opinion, the most underrated quarterback in the NFL. I think people still judge him from his early years.
And this is doing it without Jamal Charles as well.
And with that West Coast offense the Chiefs run, they're never a team to push the football down the field. And Smith still threw for well over 300 yards in that football game, and Charles' replacement, Spencer Ware, comes in. He didn't run the ball too effectively. He had 70 yards and a touchdown on the ground, but 150, I think, through the air on 7 catches. I think it was 140-something. But, man, for him to come in and fill the shoes that Jamal Charles left, that was a big win. You asked us for a surprise of the week in the NFL. That was it, certainly. In week one of the NFL, when you get down 18 points, you might go, all right, let's stay healthy. Let's pack it up. We'll move on. And the Chiefs didn't. At Arrowhead Stadium with that loud crowd, they battled back and won that football game. That was some impressive stuff. That division with the Raiders, Chiefs, and Broncos, holy cow.
My surprise was the Patriots. I thought for
really?
Sure.
Oh, you didn't think they were going to win with Garoppolo?
No.
The second most handsome man in the NFL behind Tom Brady?
No, my pick for the Super Bowl was Arizona Cardinals.
Really? Well, that's not a bad pick coming out of the NFC. That's a good pick.
Yeah, and so I just thought, like, there's no way without Gronk, without Brady, that the Patriots can go up there.
But you know who they still had? Belichick.
Belichick.
And that's what matters. But still going on that Chiefs-Houston matchup, it's going to be a good test for Osweiler as well. That's a bad and a good tense secondary with Marcus Peters and Jefferson and all
and
those
Eric
guys.
Berry in
Eric
the back.
Berry, those
they can play.
Those guys. That's one of the best secondaries in the NFL. So that's going to be a good test for Osweiler and those receivers. But good news is Osweiler has a good job. Does a good job spreading the football. I asked you guys gave your biggest surprise in the NFL. Mine was Carson Wentz. Rookie quarterback for the Eagles. Now, granted, he was playing the Browns. Warren Shore, if you're listening out there, your Browns did not look good, but what's new? Carson Wentz, 22 of 37, 278 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he's not working with much.
Yeah, and they had the biggest win of the week in week one. It seemed the parity in the NFL always is excellent, but the Eagles were the only team to win by 19 points in a football game, and that scares me as a Cowboys fan. I thought, you know, Carson would come out and see some of these elite pass rushers. I mean, even though they're on the Browns, they're still NFL-quality pass rushers coming at him. And he did good. I mean, he stuck with his read. They did a similar thing to what the Cowboys did with Dak and halved the football field for him, gave him some easy reads with flood concepts, smash concepts. But Carson, I mean, he played in a pro-style system at North Dakota State. He stepped right in there. The kid didn't look like a kid. He looked like a seasoned guy.
He's not working with the receivers that Dak Prescott is. There's no Dez Bryant on that team. There's no Jason Witten on that team. He's throwing to average NFL receivers, and, you know, 22 of 37, not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, and another surprise that surprised me this weekend was Seattle. Only putting up 12 points, barely beating Miami.
Oh, that was a defensive matchup. Miami's defense is solid. Those boys up, I mean, they spent $40 million on those boys up front. They better do something, but Ndamukong Suh and Mario Williams, that's a dangerous combination.
But the Seahawks didn't look the same without Beast Mode, without Lynch
not
back there. They were handing it to Michael. Michael and Rawls each got 12 carries, and they just wasn't the same. So the Seahawks got to figure it out because they rely on that play action, getting Wilson outside the pocket, and him, he throws the deep ball as good as any 5'10 quarterback in the history of the league. And the Seahawks were a trendy pick to come out of the NFC. The NFC is kind of stacked at the top with the Packers, Panthers, Seahawks,
Cowboys,
and Cardinals. So they were a trendy pick, but they kind of laid an egg but pulled out a win. And in the NFL, man, a 12-10 win, I mean, is just as good as that 35-34 win that the Raiders got. So.
We're running out of time here, so real quick, we got two games tonight, Monday Night Football. Pittsburgh taking on Washington, L.A. taking on San Francisco. Real quick, guys, who you got out of both of those?
I got the Steelers, and I got the Rams.
I'm never going to pick the Redskins, so I got the Steelers, and it's the Rams' first game, and they're playing the 49ers, who are a dumpster fire, so the Rams.
All right, well, I'm going to go with Pittsburgh because Roethlisberger is on my fantasy team, and I need 11 more points, so Big Ben, you got to do something. Don't throw it to Josh Norman. Just don't throw it to Josh Norman. So let's avoid that. L.A. San Francisco probably won't stay up for that game. We'll see what happens. I might fall asleep. That is probably the most boring Monday night football game I could ever think of. The only reason it's interesting is because of what Kaepernick's been doing. But even then, not interested, really. But I'm going to take L.A. first game in the NFL season. They're hyped up. They're ready to go. So I think they're going to take it. And